Hey there, Mike Stelzner coming to you with a fascinating update you might not be familiar with. Did you know that Social Media Examiner can deliver all the marketing training, news, and trends, insights that you need into your inbox 3 days a week when you sign up for our newsletter, and it's completely free? Simply visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates and take your marketing to the next level.
Welcome to the Social Media Marketing Podcast, helping you navigate the social media jungle. And now, here is your host, Michael Stelzner.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for joining me for the Social Media Marketing Podcast, brought to you by Social Media Examiner. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner, and this is the podcast for marketers and business owners who want to know how to navigate the ever-changing marketing jungle. Today, I'm going to be joined by Jay Swettleson, and we're going to explore email marketing tactics that work. If email is part of what you do, you're going to want to definitely listen to today's podcast episode. By the way, I'm at Stelzner on Facebook and at Mike_Stelzner on Twitter/X. Also, if you're new to this podcast, be sure to follow this show on your favorite podcast app so that you don't miss any of our future content. Let's transition over to this week's interview with Jay Swettleson.
Helping you to simplify your social safari. Here is this week's expert guide.
Today, I'm very excited to be joined by Jay Swettleson. If you don't know who Jay is, you've got to know Jay. He's the CEO of Outcome Media, a demand generation agency that helps marketers drive growth across B2B and B2C industries. He's also the founder of SubjectLine.com, host of the Do This, Not This podcast, and founder of Guru Media Hub and the Guru Conference. Welcome to the show, Jay. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I love this podcast, so it's an honor to be on it. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, I'm very excited that you're here, Jay. And today, Jay and I are going to talk about email marketing tactics that work. But before we go there, I'd love to hear a little bit of your backstory, because obviously you've done a lot, as I've alluded to in your introduction. So start wherever you want to start. Tell us how you got into this world of marketing and email marketing.
Yeah, it's a fun story, I guess. So I literally have been doing marketing my entire life. And the reason I say that is, my mom was a school teacher. My dad worked at this magazine company. I grew up in Long Island, New York. And around the time when I was 4 years old, they both didn't like their jobs. And they took all the money they had in the world and they bought a personal computer. This is back in the late 1979-ish. And they decided that their idea was to compile addresses in the yellow pages and to try to sell these lists that they were building for direct mail campaigns in my garage. I literally didn't have a garage. That's what they did. Thankfully, it did pretty well. I was able to eat, you know, 3 square meals a day. And, you know, as I went through school and everything, I was always just surrounded by this marketing world. And coming out of school, they were still doing their direct mail business. It was doing okay. And they wanted to get out of it. They were kind of done. And I said, you know, I love marketing. And the thing that fascinated me about marketing was that you could spend a dollar and maybe earn $2. I was like, wow, this is cool. And luckily for me, right around the time I was finishing college, around 97, 98, email was really starting to take off. And I was like, you know, this direct mail thing, I don't know about that, but this email thing is super cool because you can kind of do everything you do in direct mail, but you don't have to spend money on postage and paper and all this stuff. My folks retired and I said, I'm going to turn this thing into a marketing agency rather than a small direct mail business. And fast forward, that worked. So today I got this marketing agency called Outcome Media. We're about 100 or so people in South Florida. And we don't just do email. We do direct mail still. We do podcast advertising, all this stuff. But about 15 years ago, email really started becoming such a big part of my business. And so many of our clients would come to us and say, well, what's the right subject line to use? Right? It was business and consumer clients. And they would ask us every day. And we would give some, you know, off the cuff answer, do this, do that. And, you know, one day we're sitting around with our team and I was like, you know, there's got to be a better way. Maybe if we make a tool. So I'm sitting on my couch one night about 15 years ago and I go on GoDaddy or whatever it was, Network Solutions. And I'm like, well, it's a subject line. What about subjectline.com? And back then URLs were available. So I registered subjectline.com. The next day I come in, we program this tool and we put it up and we kept it free. It's still free today. And the whole idea is you can go there and you put in your subject line you're going to use. And using all the data that we have from all the campaigns we run, because we do about 6 billion email messages a year, we spit out how good or bad your subject line is, and it will rewrite it. And so even today, you can go to subjectline.com for free, 100% for free. We put it out there for everybody to use. And a lot of people use it to improve their subject line. And we've checked about 15 million subject lines now. So I somehow became known as like the subject line guy, which is just funny to me. And so that's what I do. I still do my agency full throttle, and we got subjectline.com and all this other stuff. And I love it. I love measurable media. That is my passion, is knowing what the outcome is. Thus the name of my business, Outcome Media, because I just like knowing you spend money and did you make money or not? And then you could do more of it. So that's kind of my origin story.
Okay. And somewhere along the line, you started a podcast called Do This, Not That. And you've also got this Guru Media thing. So talk to us about that.
Yeah. So building off of having a free tool for the planet, right? The subjectline.com, I always have felt that I wanted to get more knowledge sharing out there. I think that we could all learn from each other. And then coming out of COVID, I really felt that virtual events got stained in a bad way. That everyone was like, oh, virtual events stink. You can't really network. You can't really do anything. They're super boring. And everybody was punting on virtual events. And I felt otherwise. I was like, you know, this world that we're in, it's such a great way for us to connect. So many people are still working remotely. So I said, you know what? I want to go deeper in putting out information for the industry. So we created something called Guru Conference. And today it's the world's largest 100% free virtual email marketing conference. And so this past year, November, we just had it. It was 2 days. We had 20,000 marketers there, literally free. There's nothing you could spend money on if you tried, not on demand, not nothing. And we had all the biggest brands speaking. We had Martha Stewart speaking. And the whole point of it was to show people what's the latest in email marketing, which is what the conference was about. But we also tried to make the event very different. It was fun. We had TikTok dancers and chicken wing challenges. We had the cast of Love is Blind there, and everybody was networking, and it was genuinely fun. And so now we are putting on, you know, more events about other things, about podcasting and direct mail and all this stuff. And so this Guru Media Hub business is really a passion of mine. And then coming out of that, I was like, wow, I talk a lot. I can't shut up. And I said, maybe I should have a podcast. Why not? And so I started a podcast called Do This, Not That, where every week we actually put out 3 episodes, which is wild. Each of them are 10 minutes or less about the latest tips and tactics and stuff that you could be testing and trying in the world of marketing and email marketing and everything. So I just love putting out all the information I know, and it comes back to me. It's like a boomerang. I really believe the best way to network and to grow your business is to share knowledge with no agenda. Because when you do that, invariably people are like, hey, what do you do for a living? Can we work together? So that's my go-to-market strategy. Attribution is not very good in terms of figuring it out, but I love it. And that's how I function.
Okay. So how long has the podcast been around?
The podcast has been around just less than a year. And I'm proud to say, you know, I know that you know all about charting and all that stuff. We've gotten up to number 6 a few times on the marketing chart. And, you know, we've stayed in the top 50 for most of that time. And I'm learning. I will tell you, podcasting is a beast, right? It's a hamster wheel. And you really have to know what you're getting yourself into. So I love it. I'm meeting amazing people. I'm sharing everything that I know, but it is wild.
Well, I can tell you after more than 600 weeks in a row of doing podcasting, it is definitely, there's not a lot of people that really last that long. And once you figure it out, it's an incredible opportunity and I absolutely love it. And I love everyone who's listening and I love getting guests like you on the show. And thank you for your story. Taking it back to email marketing. This show is called the Social Media Marketing Podcast, and I cover lots of things that are not just under social marketing's umbrella, but there are plenty of marketers that are listening right now that may not be focused on email marketing or may have it as a secondary or tertiary objective and not a primary objective. What do you want to say to those marketers as to what they might be missing out on when it comes to email marketing? Why should they pay attention to what we're going to talk about today?
Yeah, you know, first off, somebody will say, okay, well, email marketing doesn't work for me. Okay, I've tried email marketing. It doesn't produce the results. And I would say email marketing is not legacy. It's not old. It's not dead, which is what people say, right? It is something that if you pay attention to the littlest pieces of email marketing, your outcomes can be radically different, right? And it ironically, even though it's the oldest channel, it is always changing, right? There's always new things to try. Listen, I love all the different measurable media. I'm not like, I love social media, all right? But here's the thing. If you go on social media and you share the content that you were trying to put out there, your offer, you'll be lucky if, you know, 15% of your network or the people that follow you see it. You're lucky, right? And if you're into search, have a good time trying to figure out the latest way to get your SEO working, because, I mean, you'll lose your mind. It's not easy, right? If you want to spend your money on display ads and radio and TV, great. But here's the story. With email, it is the only channel on earth, literally, that you decide when you want to communicate something, and you can communicate it to everybody that is in your database and at almost no cost when you hit that send button, right? So find me another channel that's that cost effective, that you're in control of your communication with your audience, and I'm all in. But that's why I love email. That's why I'm passionate about it. I truly believe it is the most valuable asset in your business, and focusing on list growth and hygiene is critical.
You know, and I think about, you and I are gray hairs. You know, we've been around for a little while. And direct mail, what are you looking at? What's the cost per unit minimum? Like $1 to $2 per unit, just per household that you're sending to?
100%. And see, I love direct mail. But the reason the direct mail is hard is that when you want to test something in direct mail, it's like, oh, I have a new idea. I want to test, you know, a new envelope or something on the postcard or whatever. You have to pony up serious money. You're ponying up postage. You're ponying up paper. You know, there's a lot of cost there, right? And you don't know if you're going to get that return. If you mail it out and you don't, you've just blown a lot of your budget. Now, an email, you could wake up today and be like, I want to test this, right? Press send. If it doesn't work, okay, on to the next. So it's not, does direct mail perform better than this or this perform better than that? You've got to look at the cost effectiveness of things. And email gives you this kind of laboratory environment where you could really just mess around and try a lot of stuff out and fail your way to success, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. And we at Social Media Examiner, you know, email is like our prime way that we do everything that we do. And we love the fact that we can do split tests and we can do all sorts of really cool experiments and track what works and what doesn't work. And these are all the things that I think make marketers who are even slightly analytical extremely excited. There are plenty of myths out there about email marketing, right? Let's address a couple of those before we get into kind of what does work.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that the thing that holds back most marketers in terms of generating the performance that they should be getting out of email is that most marketers do the same thing. They go on Google and they'll type in, you know, email best practices, what I should and shouldn't do. And sadly, there's a total proliferation of misinformation about email best practices. What do I mean by that? Okay, if you went on today to Google and said, what is the list of the 2024 spam trigger words? You would find probably 100 articles that will give you a list of, you know, 500 words to avoid that you should never put, let's say, in your subject line. Because if you do, that's going to be the primary reason you're going to the junk folder or the spam folder. Words like free, right? If you put that in your subject line, or maybe symbols, if you put an exclamation mark or a question mark in your subject line or an emoji, they'll say this will cause you to go to the junk folder because you'll look like a spammer. Now, the reason this goes under the category of myth is that if you rewind about 10 to 15 years ago, email technology and marketing technology in general was very different. The reason that you got filtered, the primary reason that you got filtered, went to the junk folder, spam folder, was based on content, the words that you were writing, the symbols that you were using in your subject line, in your headline, in your body copy. But everything changes. All technology is all changing. So if you fast forward to now, the primary reason that you stay in the inbox versus going to the junk or spam folder has nothing to do with the words or symbols that you're using. It has 100% to do with your engagement. How often are people opening and clicking and responding to your email? When they're opening, clicking, responding to your email, that is why the receiving email networks, the Gmails and Outlooks and Yahoos and Comcast and all this stuff, they're looking for that engagement. They no longer are looking at your content as the primary reason to decide where your email should go. So I say that I want to bust this myth that you have to try to avoid all this stuff, because the very things that you're avoiding, you know, a question mark, an emoji, the word free, 100 other words, right, are the things, ironically, that generate the highest engagement. So you're avoiding the things that can make you a success. And I want to liberate marketers and be like, go out there. It's not 15 years ago. And don't believe everything you read. Most marketing best practices out there are regurgitations of old information from 10 years ago. And everyone's just lazy and pumping it out there. And that frustrates me.
Let's talk about what the word engagement means, because in my audience, that might mean different than what it means for email marketing. So what does engagement actually mean? Does that mean like in Chrome, if you're using Gmail, they watch to see how long the email is open for, or what kind of metrics are they tracking?
Well, I'm glad you talked about the metrics for a second, because another big myth, and ties into this in the world of email, has to do with, let's say, open rates. Okay. And a lot of marketers will say open rates are irrelevant in email. When you send out an email, let's say you send an email to 100,000 people and you go into your track report, it says you got a 20% open rate. Okay. If you rewind 5 years ago, you could feel pretty good that, 20,000 out of the 100,000 opened my email. Those metrics are pretty sound. You fast forward to today, a lot of things have changed in the world of email. Apple's iOS, right, has inflated our open rates. How many people that are showing up as opening our emails, okay? And there's bots that are inflating our opens. So now a lot of marketers will go out there and say, well, emails, nobody should look at open rates anymore. That's not engagement. That's garbage. And I'm like, no, open rate is among the most valuable metrics that you have. And here's why I say that. Any type of metric that you're looking at in your marketing, you have to decide, is it directional or is it absolute? And in the case of email open rates, it is no longer an absolute metric. You send out an email, it says you got a 22% open rate. It does not mean 22% of the people opened up your email. It is a directional metric now. What I mean by that is, let's say you send out an email and you have 100,000 people, 50,000 people, you test putting an emoji in the subject line. The other 50,000 people, you don't. Okay, now the one where you don't have an emoji, you have a 25% open rate in your tracking. But the one that you do have an emoji, you have a 35% open rate tracking. What does that mean? It doesn't mean 35% of the people opened up the email. It
means one is better than the other.
One is better than the other. And it's almost like a survey on the marketing tactic that you are trying. So when we talk about metrics and what's important and not important, and marketers are like, they'll punt and say, well, no more open rates because they're not absolute. Well, that's ridiculous. Then why do survey companies exist? It's a directional metric. So is that engagement? That's not one I would hang my hat on, that's real engagement, okay? The click-through is essential, right? It's essential. And then ultimately, what is your ROI? Are they downloading? Are they buying? Are they subscribing? What are they doing? And backing into all the numbers. But you know, there's a lot of different metrics, but to ignore some of the upfront metrics as to, okay, did they open the email? I think you're making a huge mistake.
Okay. Talk to me about the promo tab. Why is landing in there not the end of the world?
Yes. So in Gmail, there are tabs, right? You have a promotions tab, a social tab, and your primary tab. There are three tabs. And Gmail, when the emails are coming in, it'll decide what type of email it is. Is it an offer, you know, from a brand? Is it, you know, a regular one from your cousin? What is it? Now, a lot of marketers think, oh no, my email, my offer email went into the promotions tab. This is really bad. Actually, it's really good. And here's why it's really good. So first off, not that many people are using the promotions tab. So let's manage our expectations there. Okay. Only about 15 to 20% of users actually even have the ability to enable the tabs depending on what it is that you're using, desktop, phone, version, whatever. And of those, okay, only 50% of those people are actually enabling them. So that's a lot of numbers. Here's the bottom line. Very limited number of people are using the promotions tab. A lot of marketers do. That's why they get all confused. But here's the game. The promotions tab is actually part of your inbox. It's not the junk folder. It is literally part of your inbox. When you go to the promotions tab, you've gone in the inbox. Now, here's the win that marketers don't realize. This is a big win. When you go to the mall, you are in shopping mode, okay? You're like, what am I going to buy? Am I going to go to this store? Am I going to go to that store? You got your wallet ready. You're like, I'm buying something. I didn't come here not to buy something, okay? Now, the promotions tab, believe it or not, 50% of people that have the promotions tab enabled, 50%, check their promotions tab daily. Daily. Now, what's wild about that is you don't just fall in there. You're not like, oh, what am I doing right now? Let me just click on the promotions tab. No, you're going there deliberately. Okay. It's like going to the mall. And when you go to that promotions tab deliberately, daily, you are looking for the offers. You're like, I want to see the best offers that I signed up for that I'm getting. We actually see increased performance when people go into the promotions tab. So add on to the top, it's really hard to get out of the promotions tab. It's a big pain in the butt. It's not worth the effort. And it's a happy place. Be happy that you're in there. So it's like another myth in my book.
Outstanding. Thank you. Marketers all around the world are rejoicing at the way that you're just knocking these myths down. Did you know that we can deliver awesome marketing info directly into your inbox? Simply subscribe to our weekly newsletter that comes out 3 days a week. You won't miss any of the updates going on in the world of social marketing. visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates. Okay, let's talk about subject lines. What works with subject lines? This is your domain expertise. Like, let's talk about, at least as we're recording this in 2024, like what's working right now with subject lines?
Well, I am passionate about subject lines because they are the deciding factor if somebody's going to open your email or not. So marketers always have it backwards, right? They'll work on their campaigns, business or consumer marketer. Oh my, the greatest creative, the greatest copy ever. The legal has finally approved it. Everything's working. They're like, what's the subject line? And they spend 3 seconds on it, which is totally backwards. Because if somebody doesn't open up your email, who actually cares?
Right.
Who really cares what's in your email? Like, what's the difference, right? So we got to focus on that subject line. Now, here's the thing that we often don't understand, which is nobody actually reads your whole subject line. When you're at home tonight and you're looking in your email, I want you to think to yourself, oh my goodness, is he right? I'm actually not reading the full subject line. You're only reading the first few characters. You're reading the first half of your subject line. So I know this all sounds ridiculous, but it's a reality. The first few characters in your subject line can radically change the performance of your campaign. So let me give you some examples of what I mean. If you start your subject line with a number, an actual number, like the number 7, the number 3, the number 9, the 7 pitfalls to avoid for small business owners, the 3 hottest fashion trends, our 5 most popular styles, you start your subject line with an actual number, we see open rates lift by about 20%. Now, why? It's not like somebody's going through their inbox and they say, oh, that number is amazing. I've never seen the number 7 before. This is the greatest number I've ever seen. Nobody does that. But when they're doing their social scroll, they're going, you know, really fast. There's that millisecond that the number stands out just a little bit. And they're like, oh, what is this? And then what a number does, it's authoritative. And it makes people feel like, oh, this is going to be something I can digest. And also it's like, wow, I can consume this fast. I know it's going to be the 3 this, the 5 that, the 9 this. So number to start is a home run. Another thing to start your subject line with, yes, emojis. Emojis can be viewed properly by about 95% of all receiving email networks now. I know it sounds ridiculous, but the reality of it is an emoji gets things to stand out. You don't need to use a happy face emoji. You could use a calendar emoji. You could use a checkmark emoji. There's a zillion different emojis. The end of the story is that it helps your email stand out. And we see about a 25% lift when you test an emoji. And it's not just for consumer marketers, business marketers too. If emojis were called business icons and they didn't have a stupid name like emoji, you would all use it. It just has bad branding. It needs a new PR person. So emojis is a no-brainer. Some other little things in the subject line that are working right now is capitalizing that first word. No, it won't cause you to go to the junk folder or the spam folder. You take whatever the most important word is and you start your subject line and capitalize it. Maybe it's the word new.
Why would you not capitalize it? I mean, this is a stupid question, but I do see some people lowercasing that first word. That feels like a mistake. You know what I mean?
It's a huge missed opportunity. And it is, again, one of those myths. They're like, oh, I've always read that if you capitalize in the subject line, you'll go into the junk folder or spam folder. Or this is the dreaded thing in all of marketing. Okay, I'm going to tell you what I think every marketer needs to never do, which is capitalizing makes it feels like somebody's yelling at me. And the marketer will say this, I don't like it when I get those. I don't like it when I see that. When we put on our own feelings, as opposed to actually testing stuff, and we say, I wouldn't respond to that, immediately when you say that sentence, you must test that thing. Because you are not your database. You're not. You must test things. And you will be surprised over and over and again. And capitalizing that first word is a no-brainer.
Okay, what about capitalizing every word? I feel like that's probably too much, right? Like people make headline case kind of stuff.
You know, the going rule is you don't want to capitalize more than 50% of your subject line. I mean, I don't know that that's a hard rule that you have to follow, but capitalizing your entire subject line, we've actually seen that hurt performance. The best thing that we've seen is capitalizing the first word or the first 2 words. Another thing that's working really well right now, I don't think enough marketers are testing it, is using brackets. So you can start your subject line with brackets and you put the most important thing in the brackets, you know, giant sale or just in, and you put it in brackets to start your subject line. And again, when you're hitting send and you're pressing that button, what you want to ask yourself every single time is, what am I doing right now to get my email to stand out and not everybody else's? Am I doing something in that subject line that's going to allow me to stand out a little bit? And it could be brackets, it could be capitalizing word, it could be emoji, it could be a number. You got to do something to be a little different, and that's how you win.
Okay, I want to get clarification because I know somebody's probably thinking this. When you say capitalize, you don't mean all caps, the first word. You just mean the first character in the first word.
No. I actually mean all caps in that whole word. So let's say the word's new.
Okay.
You're capitalizing the entire word new.
That's an important distinction that a lot of people...
That is an important distinction.
Okay.
Yes, you're capitalizing the entire first word, every letter in that word. The other side of it would be title casing, right? Title casing actually works, where in your subject line, you are capitalizing the first letter of each word, okay? Actually, the first letter of each word is called title casing, and actually, you will get a lift by doing that. The irony of the subject line and of email in general is you should ignore everything you learned in any English class you ever took. Poor grammar wins. Poor punctuation wins, okay? It's what stands out. It's what we react to. So yeah, capitalizing every letter in the first word is what we're talking about.
What about putting the word for? We talked about when we were prepping for this, like for new parents or whatever, like saying who it's for. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So one of the big topics in email marketing and marketing in general is personalization. When we say personalization in email marketing, a lot of marketers default to thinking that that means you're going to put the person's first name. It's going to say J, comma, check this out. That's personalization from 10 years ago that is garbage. Okay, it actually doesn't do anything anymore, first name personalization in the subject line. It very rarely gives you a big lift. But other forms of personalization are crushing it in the subject line. And the concept here is the faster you could tell somebody who they are, the faster it is that they're going to open up that email and engage. What do I mean by that? Personalization about interests, for example. If you write just for DIYers, just for golf enthusiasts, okay? Just for people who love to fish, just for fashionistas. And when you get that, like if you sent out an email today and you said just for marketers, you're like, what? I'm a marketer. You immediately feel that it's about you, it resonates with you, and you're going to open it up, okay? You could even do it on the B2B side, right? Just for CFOs, just for new business owners, right? You want to tell the person who they are. And then you can also layer in things like life events, just for new homeowners, right? Just for new parents. When you could tell the person who they are, that's the personalization that does incredibly well. It's not putting the person's first name. That's not impressive anymore, right? So telling them who they are, I think, is probably the single best way to generate engagement now as compared to 5 years ago.
Okay, this isn't part of our planned line of questions, but I have a question about split testing. Different tools have different kinds of split testing. Some of them will do like run both variants for the first like hour or 2 hours, pick the winner and send the rest. Others are like split it right down the middle for the entire send. Do you have a preference as to which one's the better way to do a split test?
So that's a great question. I'm a bigger fan. I know a lot of people do that after an hour. Let's roll out to the bigger population, because you don't want to waste the send, if you will.
Right.
Right. I'm a bigger fan of statistical relevance, right? So if you're sending out, you have 100,000 people in your database, do a true A-B split, 50,000, 50,000, because you want to really be able to get a read that you can react to. And then the other piece of that, when you're thinking about your test, whatever it is that you're testing, and I think this is a mistake marketers make a lot, make sure that your test is different enough. Okay. It's different enough. You can't have an A and a B that are sort of the same. You want to make sure your A subject line and your B subject line are radically different, because if not, you're not going to have anything to build on. The worst test you could possibly do is one that you can't scale or is statistically irrelevant, right? Like if you're setting up a test, for example, you're like, all right, we're only going to send this to our 10%, our best 10% customers or whatever. And that's a population of this. Well, what happens when that works? You don't have another 10%. Right? So make sure your tests are of a small percentage of a much bigger pool that you have. So that way, when the test works, you have something to scale. Don't test into a small population because you're wasting your time.
I love this because obviously when you run an email test, there's multiple variables that you might want to test. The obvious ones that the email platforms are going to provide are either clicks or opens, but there might be another test, which is conversions, which you cannot track within the email platform, right? And that's where you're going to have to actually have slightly different messages with different trackable UTM parameters on it. And testing can be really sophisticated. So thank you for that. Let's talk about promotional emails. Obviously, subject lines a lot of the ones that we've talked about would be great for people to test. What is working these days when it comes to promotional emails? Because we've got an audience of marketers here and they kind of want to know if there are certain tips or techniques that you can give them on the promotional side of things.
I would say in the world that we live in today, and again, I think it's underutilized, the most powerful word in marketing is the word most. What do I mean by that? All of us have a shared brain. We really do. This past weekend, okay, I have teenage kids, my wife, we wanted to order pizza from a new pizza place. And of course, we're all texting each other, even though we're in the same house. And we're like, where should we order from? So we all start texting each other different pizza places on Uber Eats. Okay, so I send one to my family and everybody writes back to me that I'm a big dummy because the one that I sent had a 3.9 review, right? 3.9 stars. Like, we can't order from that. That's disgusting. What's wrong with you, right? And that's because we live in this world where we just want to know what everybody else thinks about everything. So the way that comes into our marketing is the word most. If you go out there within your subject line or on your website or whatever, and you promote things as our, in literally, most popular style, most five-star reviews, most downloaded tip sheet, and you literally are telling everybody, this is the most, this is it, okay? It's the social proofing of your marketing. And starting that subject line with the word most and then promoting it, telling everyone, this is it. You don't want to miss out. It's even beyond just an offer, right? You know, oh, I'm doing buy one, get one free. I'm doing free shipping, whatever. No, you don't even need to go that far. Just tell people. And everybody has a most and a least. That's the irony, right? You do. I don't care if you only have three things that you sold on your site. You have most and you have least. You literally could take the most downloaded, the most popular, the most reviewed, the most favorited, the most whatever. You promote it that way, and I promise you, you're going to see a lift because that is how we function on this planet.
Outstanding. We also talked about Almost Gone. You want to talk to me about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's along the same lines of most, but really what we're talking about is urgency and FOMO. You know, if somebody stopped me on the street and they said, okay, you're into email marketing. What are the two things that I should always be thinking about my email marketing? And I would say urgency and FOMO, fear of missing out. That's it. Those are the two things. If you send something out and one version of your message has urgency built in and the other one doesn't, forget it. It's night and day in terms of performance. Now, some marketers will tell me, well, I have a promotion that doesn't end. Okay. It's a promotion that doesn't end in 2 days. I can't say only 48 hours left.
But you could have a sale that ends, right?
Right. And how do you promote urgency when there is no urgency, but you still want to have some urgency? You need to do things like, don't miss out or hurry, right? Things like that where you're telling the person, hey, listen, you got to check this out because we are trained. We're like trained dogs. When we say don't miss out, oh, we're like, oh my God, I'm going to miss out. Ah! And we react, right? And the same thing with Almost Gone. I didn't even want the thing that they're promoted. But when they start the subject line with capitalize the entire phrase, almost gone, I'm like, oh my goodness, I need this thing. Whatever it is, I need to get it right now. Telling people it's almost gone is a home run. Or putting in your subject line, only 322 of these left in stock. Oh my goodness, I gotta get it. It's that feeling of I'm gonna miss out. And that's how we drive performance.
There are lots of marketers that have decent sized databases and they send the same message over and over to the entire database. What do you wanna say to them?
Look, it's not gonna help you if you're just being wallpaper. Okay, it's just not. Right? You need to create this excitement with the people that you're marketing to. So I think marketers make a mistake of having a template, right? I have templates for my emails. We all do, right? You have a template and you're like, my template's great. It checks off every box, every best practice. I got the logo in the right place. I got my image. I got whatever. The problem with always sending out your marketing in the template that you use is that if I said to you a particular brand that you get emails from right now, in your mind, you could actually see what that template looks like. You could see what the email looks like without even opening it. And what happens to the recipients in your database, because they're just seeing it over and over again, they don't open up your emails anymore because there's nothing in there. And this is all subconscious, right? There's nothing in there that they think is going to be different. So the most important thing that marketers can really do as it comes to formats, and we try to say every third email, at least every third email, have a radical departure of your standard template, your standard format. It could be a letter format. Even if you're just a pure play direct-to-consumer marketer, it could be a letter format from your CEO saying, hey, a new special discount for you or whatever. Because what happens is that every third email is a radical departure in terms of format. You're creating this little bit of excitement that, hey, maybe I should check it out. Maybe it won't be the same thing. And the interesting part, you don't just get better engagement on the radical departure format. You get better engagement on all the emails you're sending, because now you're creating this curiosity of maybe it's not the same thing over and over and over again, which is literally you can print it out and make wallpaper and design your house.
Yeah. And it is funny because with images in particular, I think marketers are the best pattern recognition people on the planet. And I'm marketing to marketers, right? So I have to be very cognizant that they have this ridiculous memory for patterns. So when I'm promoting, for example, social media marketing world, I'm making sure I'm not using the same image that I used in another email, because I just know they're going to be like, oh, saw that image, I'm out of there, right? We got to mix it up. We got to try a lot of different images. Fortunately, I've got hundreds to choose from, you know, because of all the photographs we take at our event. But I'm with you. But it is harder to, like, when you have a format that works, to change the format, you know, because in your mind, you're changing the subject, the substance of the message. But mixing up the format, that scares people, because they're like, I don't want to mess with a proven thing. And that's where I think experimenting is helpful, right? Maybe you do a split test on format A versus format B, right? And you see which one converts better.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the other thing about testing, and even goes back to the myths, right, is that marketers will test something and they'll get unsubscribes, right? They'll get unsubscribes and they'll think, oh, I got unsubscribes because I tested this new format. This is really bad. Let's go back to our old format. Okay. And here's the crazy part, talking about myth busting from before. Unsubscribes are good, not bad. Now, I know that sounds ridiculous. What is an unsubscribe? You send out an email, somebody opens up, oh, I don't want it, take me off your list. Why do I think that they are good? They are good because here's what really is happening. There's two reasons people unsubscribe. One, they need to reshuffle their life. They're subscribed to too many things, then they're unsubscribing from like 20 things at one time in that bad day that they're having. The other big reason is you listen to this podcast and you said, that guy, Jay, he talks a lot. He's all over the place, but he said I should try brackets in my subject line. So you go out and you try the brackets, you hit send, and you know what? You get a great open rate, great click-through rate, but you know what else you got? You got more unsubscribes than ever. And you're saying, well, that guy, Jay, doesn't know what he's talking about. I got all these unsubscribes. He's terrible. No, that's not what happened. What happened was, because you used brackets, you tried something new for the first time in forever, you stood out to that person who hasn't even really seen your email. It's been wallpaper to them. And they opened up the email and then said, you know what? This isn't for me anymore. I don't do this for a living anymore. I'm not interested in this product anymore. I just bought socks. I'm going to buy them. I'm going to remove myself, right? You're generating more unsubscribes because you're generating more interest, right, in what you are doing. So you can't look at these things where you're changing a format or a subject line and then you react to this one metric that really is not the metric that you think it is. And never, never let the nastygram change your marketing. I hate that. Every marketer will send out an email and then they'll get one nastygram back. They'll write back, I hate you. Why are you sending me this? This might even be illegal. What you're doing is wrong. I never opted in. You're a terrible person.
I had someone tell me they're reporting me to the police department as harassment.
Yes.
I had someone tell me this.
It's unbelievable. Keyboard commandos are everywhere. And it's because email is so easy to react to. And the magic of email, somehow it circulates into your company. It always makes it to like the CEO, who then forwards it back down to the marketing person. And it gets to your inbox and you're like, oh my God, I got a nasty gram. And what do? We all say, oh no. Stop. We're sending out too much. We need to send out less because we got this one email from this person who's having a really bad day and they're ruining my marketing campaigns, but we're going to stop sending email. You can never react. Don't let the loudest voice in the room change your marketing plans. It drives me crazy in the world of email because it happens all the time.
Well, you're talking to social media marketers. They're used to getting this stuff on the social platforms. So you're preaching to the choir here. Okay, let's talk about call to actions inside of emails. Number one is many email providers offer buttons. Other people just use good old-fashioned links. Do buttons versus no buttons matter? And if so, also what copy should we have inside of these calls to action?
Well, graphical buttons are great. I mean, if you're going to do one or the other, I go graphical button. I like having actually both in messages, especially when people have images turned off. But the biggest thing about call to action buttons is the words that you're using for these buttons, which I think really is a massive missed opportunity. What do I mean by that? You can write whatever you want on these buttons. And you might think, well, I'm tuning this out. This is irrelevant. But no, this is like a game changer. Here's a crazy stat. When you write your call to action buttons in first person, you can see over a 20% increase in your click-through rates. What do I mean by that? Let's say it was a webinar you're promoting, right? In the message, does it say register, okay? Or does it say save my spot? Which one sounds better to you? Or if it's a direct-to-consumer offer, does it say buy now or get me my discount? You could literally write get me my discount instead of buy now. Buy now is a benefit to you, the sender. Get me my discount or ooh, I want this right there on the button, right? That's a benefit to me, the recipient. When you write it in first person, and the buttons can be long. They don't need to be one word or two words. It can be really long. When you write your call to action buttons in first person, it dramatically changes the number of click-throughs that you're generating because the person feels invested, they feel excited, and they're not looking at the button saying, this is the greatest button I've ever seen in my life. No, they're moving very fast. And they're like, you know what? And they react to it. So buy now, put that on the shelf.
I like that. I've experimented with that a lot, actually. And it is true, like, tell me more, or I want in, or save my seat, you know, these kind of words. I do think help. And I think there's some psychology at play there, you know?
Absolutely.
And you're right. It's about them thinking about themselves instead of them thinking about you, someone who's trying to take something from them, right?
Always. Yes. Benefit versus commitment, always.
Okay. Time of day, does it matter, and day of week when it comes to sending emails? What's your thoughts on that?
You know, you'll read a lot of information out there about all of this stuff. And I think the first thing that marketers need to do is not rely on whatever best practice you might Google out there. But the first thing you want to do is you want to benchmark yourself. I don't care what an industry average is. People say, what's the best day to send it out? An industry average says, do this, that. Benchmark yourself. Okay. What are your open rates and your click-through rates and all this when you're doing your sends? Okay. And you also want to break out the different types of emails that you're sending, because people react to different kinds of emails at different times of the day. What do I mean by that? You have newsletters, you have offer emails, you have announcement emails. Newsletters are read way earlier than promotional emails, right? And so when you go and you Google, what's the best time to send an email? It'll literally say consumer emails do best at 11 a.m. Well, are all of your emails exactly the same? Your newsletters, your announcements? No, they're not. So you want to bucket your emails when you're doing your sends and have your own benchmarks by the type of email that you're sending. Now, it's always changing, the best time, the best day. But what you always want to think about is who you're sending to. I'll give you an example of what I mean. It's interesting in the world of email is that age plays a reverse order when people want to engage with email. The older you are, we found, the older you are, for example, boomers, the older you are, the earlier you read email because they're getting up, they're reading stuff, right? So if you go in reverse order of who your audience is, right? If you're targeting Gen Z instead of boomers, Gen Z is going to be reading that email later in the morning, later in the day. So you want to think about who you're marketing to, and also could be on the B2B side, you know, if you're marketing to construction people super early in the morning, writing, you know, healthcare people a little later in the day. So who you are matters. But here's the most important thing I would tell you is that you want to be trying all sorts of different days and understand your metrics. What do I mean? So let's say you send an email out on a Thursday and it gets 30% open rate, 5% click-through rate, whatever. And then you're like, I'm going to test Sunday, because you should test every day and continue to test every day. But on Sunday, when you send it out, you only got a 20% open rate and a 2% click-through rate. So what are you saying to yourself? You're saying, well, Thursday did a lot better because I had a much higher open and click rate. But no, that's not what you want to look at. What you want to understand is that different people read email at different times. So when you send out that email on Sunday, you're actually going to get a population of people that probably are never going to be opening up your email on that Thursday. It is okay to get lower performance on off days or off times, because what you're doing in aggregate, you're going to be reaching more of your database. You're going to be getting more engagement because different people are going to be engaging with your emails. So you can't look at numbers just as just comparable when they're on different days and different times, because you're actually you're getting different people to react to your messages, which is a win.
What about when you have a global audience? Do you recommend scheduling it to go out at like 11 a.m. in their time zone? Or do you recommend just deciding to focus on your core audience, which might be Americans, for example?
Well, that's an interesting question. I do think local time zones really, really important if you could set it up. The other thing I think marketers may not even know that they have available, a lot of marketers use different types of sophisticated sending platforms. Most platforms now have something called send time optimization as an available option, right? Send time optimization is when your platform is learning the habits of every single person individually in your database and when they like to open and read their emails. And marketers, I don't think, take advantage of this enough. And what you really want to do is go back to your platform and say, hey, do I have send time optimization available for my database? Because if you do, especially for a global audience, it can radically change your performance. And most marketers have it available, but they don't take advantage of it. But short answer, I like local time zone for everything.
Meaning you try to tell it to send at whatever the person's local time zone is at this particular time.
Exactly right.
Jay, wow. This has been like drinking from a fire hose. There's been a lot of great content here. I know that there's going to be people that want to check out your podcast and also want to check out you on the socials. So mention the name of your podcast again. And then if they want to connect with you on the socials, what's your preferred channel? And then if they want to check out your business, where do you want to send them?
I appreciate that. Yeah. So I have my podcast, which I really try hard to pump out stuff on. It is called Do This, Not That with Jay Schwedelson, my crazy long name. So Do This, Not That. My preferred channel is LinkedIn. I'm all over LinkedIn. I'm always sharing stuff. Please connect with me. I love LinkedIn. If you go to my full name, jschwedelson.com, you'll find my whole world. You'll find all my different websites, my conferences, everything I'm doing. So jschwedelson.com. You'll also find my podcast there. This has been fantastic. I loved being here. Such a valuable resource. Thanks for doing what you're doing.
Jay, thank you so much for coming on the show. Hey, if you missed anything, we took all the notes for you over at socialmediaexaminer.com/605. If you're new to the show, be sure to follow the show. If you've been a longtime listener, would you let your friends know about us? At Stelzner on Facebook, at @Mike_Stelzner on Twitter/X. And do check out our other shows, the Marketing Agency Show and the Social Media Marketing Talk Show. This brings us to the end of yet another episode of the Social Media Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner. I'll be back with you next week. I hope you make the best out of your day and may your marketing keep evolving. Catch you next time.
The Social Media Marketing Podcast is a production of Social Media Examiner.
Want more good stuff? Sign up for our top-notch social marketing newsletter. We deliver it straight into your inbox 3 days a week. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates.